Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Open Observability Talks. I'm your host, Totan Horvitz, and here at Open Observability Talks, we talk about anything DevOps, observability, and open source. So may the open source be with you. And for those on the YouTube, you probably see that I'm not with my usual shirt. Usually I have the May the Open Source Be With You shirt, but this time I have my CNCF Ambassador shirt. And that's especially for the topic of this special episode, summarizing KubeCon that just took place last week. But before that, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Logs.io, the cloud-native observability platform. Logs.io takes the best-of-breed open-source projects such as Prometheus, OpenSearch, and Jaeger, and offers them as a unified observability platform built for scale. For those joining the live stream on YouTube or Twitch, feel free to share questions and comments on the live chat. That will definitely make our fireside chat here more interesting, especially this time that it's KubeCon. So if you were at KubeCon and you have your own insights to share, do feel free to chime in. And with that, let's move on to today's episode. So as I said, last week, the cloud native community held KubeCon North America 2023, which this year was held in Chicago. For those who've missed it or have spent too much time in the hallway track, I, as your faithful CNCF ambassador, will explore today important highlights from KubeCon. And I have a fellow CNCF ambassador with me. And that'll be the first part of the episode. On the second part, we will also zoom in on Istio, the open source service mesh project. Istio is so popular that it has its own collocated event at KubeCon, Istio Day, and we'll cover highlights from that collocated event as well. And I'll be joined today by, as I said, a fellow CNCF ambassador and a true Istio authority, Lin Sun. Lin is the director of open source at Solo.io. She has worked on the Solo service mesh since the beginning of the project in 2017 and serves on the Istio steering committee and the technical oversight committee for the project. And she's also the author of the book Istio Ambient Explained and the co-author of Istio Explained. So a real Istio authority. Glad to have you, Lin, on the show.
Thank you so much, Dontan. So excited to be here chatting with you about KubeCon and the service mesh.
Yeah. And excited to have you here. First of all, as a fellow CNCF ambassador, you're well acquainted with the full broad spectrum of the CNCF. So you'll be probably having a very good insight from KubeCon that you attended. And also, I should congratulate you. Last week at KubeCon, you won a very special award, the Chop Wood Carry Water Award, one of five there on the KubeCon stage with the CNCF CTO, Chris Anicek. So can you tell us what this award means and why you got it as an opening warm-up question?
Okay, so first of all, before I get to the award, I want to say I want to wear the same shirt as you, but I don't have my ambassador shirt yet. So finger crossed, I will get mine soon. So the Chop Wood Carry Water Award is, I actually never thought I would get it. You know, it's like, I feel like I've done a lot of stuff in the community and I never thought, you know, it would be awarded to me. It's supposed to give the award to people doing work in the community without being noticed, right? So luckily, I actually got multiple people nominated for me. I'm very, very thankful. And I think part of the reason I got it is not only because my work in Istio, which is very visible, and a lot of people knows me in the Istio community because I do a lot of visible work there and also invisible work there, but also because my recent work within the tech network, right? I've actually been running the tech network since August for almost 3 months, and I didn't have a title yet. So I think part of the reason I got the award was also because I was running the tech networking without any title. I just rolled my sleeve and felt, you know, let me step in and do the work. Because my other co-chair, he had a lot of challenges in life. So we all respect that. Yeah.
Amazing. And I should use this opportunity to share with the audience. First of all, TAG, for those who don't know, is a technical advisory group within the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. And you were talking about TAG Network, so the technical advisory group for the networking piece. And you're just actually, you're about to be officially nominated a co-chair after stepping up into this gap. You're now going to be officially nominated. The elections are ongoing, but looking at the voting, I think it's pretty much a done deal. So maybe we're the first stage, official stage, that we can actually announce and congratulate you for nominated TAG Network co-chair. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about that because I feel like I have connections as a maintainer on the Istrio project, right? Now I'm also representing the TAG. So I'm thinking both of the hats with the TAG and also the hats of the maintainer. How do we bring value, be able to be helpful and contribute to the maintainers so the maintainers can come to the TAG meeting and be willing to contribute and collaborate with other project maintainers. So I'm super excited about this.
Amazing, amazing. So really a great achievement. And again, honor to have you
thank you.
I'm sure that you can shed a lot of light on both the parts of the episode. But let's start with the first part, talking about some significant highlights from KubeCon. And I know that KubeCon is so packed with news that it'd be difficult to cover all of them in just half of the episode. But I will try at least on my end to focus at least on the observability related or interfacing news, because it's ultimately the main topic of the podcast. And obviously happy to have your insights as well. Maybe first thing that I should say, and I mentioned Istio Day, which is a co-located event dedicated to Istio. We'll touch upon that in the second part. Another co-located event, very successful one, is Observability Day. Co-located the KubeCon event that is dedicated specifically to observability. So if you haven't been aware of that, it's a separate registration for next KubeCon's 2024. I would highly recommend having a look at Observability Day, the day before the main KubeCon starts. There were a few interesting things that that I thought of sharing. First of all, FluentBit, a very, very popular log shipping, log collection, and now broader than just logging, that has reached, I think, nearly 11 billion downloads. Last week, it was 10.9 or something like that. So probably by now they're around 11 billion downloads. And they mentioned the creator who represented that said that around 80% of that were done in the last 18 months. So that's that's astonishing. And they announced the release of FluentBit 2.2 with lots of goodies there, a new YAML configuration format. We all love YAML, right? We're all YAML engineers in one form or the other. So now FluentBit is also aligning with this fabulous standard. And then additional things, ability to collect node exporter metrics from Linux, macOS, Windows, and others, very inspired by Prometheus node exporter. So you'll feel very comfortable there. And planning, by the way, FluentBit 3.0 major release for next KubeCon Europe in Paris in March 2024. So lots of updates that you should follow up. And by the way, Eduardo Silva, the creator that presented there on Observability Day, was also here on the show, on the podcast just a couple of months ago. So you have another opportunity to also get some FluentBit updates if you catch up on the on that episode. So just wanted to share that, and obviously sharing also here the link with the live stream audience. I'll also share that on the show notes with the listeners of the podcast. That's one thing. The other thing that I wanted to mention is about OpenTelemetry. We get to talk about OpenTelemetry a lot on this show, and lots of news around OpenTelemetry. I guess the biggest news, and especially for me, is the general availability for the OpenTelemetry logging. That was the last of the three pillars that was not generally available. And with that, actually, now we can say that both metrics, traces, and logs are now generally available, meaning that we can have like a whole version of OpenTelemetry for the three pillars, if you wish, that is already production ready. And also already client libraries available for Java, .NET, C++, PHP for logging. So already you can already start implementing this into your applications if you're there. Very briefly, also the OpenTelemetry protocol, OTLP, reached 1.0, which is also a very important milestone. And notably, Jaeger also integrated OTLP natively, and Prometheus is on its way to doing the same. So we can see the adoption and convergence in the open source realm around the protocol.
Huge congratulations to the OpenTelemetry
community. To everyone. Yes, you're right. It's been a huge effort. And I think that the big thing for me in OpenTelemetry is more than the open source tooling is the open standardization, which is something that I talked about quite a bit. So the ability to create a unified language, if you wish, for telemetry, and having other pieces, both in the open source and commercial, that are converging around that, that's a main success story of OpenTelemetry.
Yeah.
Let me just have a look very quickly. OpenTelemetry's HTTP semantic conventions also declared stable. That's the first semantic conventions that to be declared stable. So finally, we see that a proposed open standards is very, very important. And part of that, by the way, includes the enhancements resulting from the convergence with Elastic Common Schema, another very successful community, open source community, the Elasticsearch community, and its aggregated experience around log analytics. So, and again, you can have a look at the blog post by the OpenTelemetry community that I will paste here about this success. Did you, by the way, have any interesting things that caught your eye with regards to OpenTelemetry or anything related to that domain?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have chance to go to the OpenTelemetry colo events. I've been hopping on the first day before KubeCon. I've been hopping between Wasm Day, Istio Day, and SiliumCon. I had to walk 10 minutes between SiliumCon to Istio Day because they are like different floor, they're on the different end of the building. So I've just been busy because I was co-chair for the Wasm Day. Then I had a talk on the Istio Day. And then we also had a talk on the SiliumCon that I need to be there to be supportive. So yeah,
fully understood. So, that's what it means to have so many titles and responsibilities and co-chairing a co-located event is in its own big task. So amazing stuff. Maybe one more thing that was released shortly before KubeCon is that the CNCF has released the what they call the Project Journey Report that actually aggregates the journey from the initiation until today. And it was very impressive. They showed some very impressive numbers, over 1,100 companies and 9,100 individuals contributed code, amounting to tens of thousands of code commits and pull requests. That was very, very impressive. All this leap from the merge of open tracing and open census back in 2019 until today. So check out the report; it's publicly available. I'll share it. I'll share it here. So these were a few of the things, but I'm curious about the things that you found interesting at KubeCon.
Lynn. Yeah, so on the colo event, I participated on Wasm Day, which was super interesting because Wasm is gaining a lot of momentum in the cloud native community, right? So I gave a talk on how you could potentially integrate Wasm with Istio Ambient Service Mesh. So that talk was very well received with demos where we can show you when your application has potentially leaked some security information. In our demo, we showed a social security number, and then you could potentially deploy a Wasm to your Istio ambient waypoint without restarting of your application, and then it would actually change in the response of your application to hide the security information for you. So that was super cool. We had a presenter talking about Wasm component model, which is super, super interesting, where they talk about how to make Wasm componentized, like OSGI programming model, right? You could potentially reuse the extend build a dependency around the Wasm development ecosystem. So I thought that's really interesting and potentially, increase the popularity of Wasm. There was a very interesting talk from John from the Istio community about how we design Istio Ambient for large scale. I thought that was a very interesting talk to give user insights of how we design Istio Ambient and architected it for much, much larger scale than the sidecars, which most of you are using in Istio in production today. One thing I also find interesting is there is this notion of cake stack. So if you are wondering what cake stands for, it's C stands for Cilium, A stands for Ambient, K stands for Kubernetes, and E stands for Envoy, and cakes with S stands for Spiffy and Spire. Right? So that's the entire cloud native stack, which is kind of like the best of you pick the best CNI, you pick the best container orchestration system, you pick the best service mesh, right? You pick the best, identity system. So I thought that was interesting discussed at KubeCon also. Yeah. Tim Hawken also gave an interesting keynote. I don't know if you heard of it. So he was talking about future of Kubernetes in the next 10 years, and an interesting takeaway for me is he talked about Kubernetes should stay unfinished, which is a super interesting way. Now I'm looking as a project maintainer, I'm looking at Istio, right? A lot of users come to Istio asking a lot of functions, and we often juggle through, should we put this function into the mainstream of Istio? And, I think what he said about Kubernetes also applies to Istio, leave Istio unfinished to some extent. Yeah, so that was interesting. And
said something that I liked in this talk, this keynote. I even tweeted about that, the fact that one of the biggest pains is the Kubernetes complexity. Like his talk was actually a consolidation of lots of feedback that he gathered and he showed on the slide. And
I
one of the
that
things
too.
That he highlighted that resonated very well, that as maintainers of Kubernetes, they are so well immersed in Kubernetes, sometimes they don't see that from outside. It's actually very challenging in terms of the level of complexity, which is actually growing over time. And maybe tackling the complexity and actually simplifying, maybe even reducing some of the options, will actually make things easier. So this is one of the takeaways. And I can give a hint. I wasn't sure if to tell that, but I will share it now, that next month's episode, I will host Kelsey Hightower to talk about exactly these things, maybe summarizing the year-end summary of 2023 with looks forward. And one of the things that I wanted to discuss with him and I'm going to discuss is exactly where we see the future of Kubernetes and how we're going to tackle these challenges. So it's definitely on my mind and I'm going to discuss that further, but a fascinating keynote by Tim.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. And I really felt it resonates a lot of discussion we're having in the Istio community too, right? Are we owning too much problems of service mesh problem in the Istio? That's why we got the heads of, the most feature rich, but on the other hand, it can be perceived as complex.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go over a few other. Obviously, we'll discuss much more about the Istio and service mesh realm in the second part. So I want to leave some of these goodies for the second part. But just to go over broader updates that I wanted to share quickly with the audience, that caught my eye at least. Main announcements about Crossplane announced version 1.14. They actually talked about the biggest release they had to date with over 700 commits. And lots of improvements that they featured around developer experience, the CLI, and more. So do check out the Crossplane release. I'm pasting it here for the audience, for the live stream audience. Some other things: Kiverno expanded beyond Kubernetes. Had some very interesting. Kiverno is the open source policy engine originally built for Kubernetes, but now. It adds support for non-Kubernetes workloads by supporting policies that operate on JSON payloads. So if you think about it as a platform engineer, in addition to Kubernetes, with all due respect, you also use CI/CD systems, you use infrastructure as code tools, serverless workloads, and other cloud services, and so on. And now you can actually use Kubernetes declarative policies to apply unified governance across all of these systems. So I found it quite interesting. Some other things, Vitess had the version 18 and now generally available. This is the sharding middleware for currently it's MySQL, but a database, a tool for deploying, scaling, managing large clusters under the cloud native ecosystem, of course. And now they had a major release. So these are like part of the main highlights that I wanted. Was there anything else that you had interesting in this domain?
Not particularly in the domain you just covered. I would say, you know, I wish there's a little bit more content around the AI. I think Priyanka did a fantastic job on the first day of KubeCon, opening keynote, right? She actually did a live demo of running an AI bot on her laptop and be able to ask, what is CNCF? But what it feels like is there was no other keynote or not many sessions talking about AI. So I actually went to the AI hub, I believe it was on Wednesday briefly. You know, there are on conference topics. So there was one gentleman there was talking about Hugging Face, which is a super cool AI site that teaches you how to, you know, do a bunch of like development models around the AI. So I feel I left with a lot of things to learn. I think it's a super hot space, but I feel like we're just kind of building infrastructure, but not, you know, be able to serve our user, for AI at the moment yet. But yeah, definitely a promising space.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that as a cloud native community, we're still lagging behind, as you saw with Vitess, which is a traditional relational database. We're only now in version 1.18, and that's the traditional a relational database that you and I have been running 20-30 years ago. So getting into the large learning models, language models, sorry, and the training and the inference and all of that, I think we're not yet there, although some use cases are there that people run these sorts of workloads on Kubernetes, but it's more on the infrastructure level. I don't see that still going up the stack to more systematic services. So that's actually interesting and looking forward to seeing how this evolves.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how this evolves and also be part of it too, right?
That's for sure. Maybe one more note that was interesting for me from the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation has released the GitOps microservice. The microservices like microservice that they get from the community members answering about their own experiences, their own organizations, how they do things, this time about GitOps. And it was very interesting to see. So I would like to share. We won't have time. Maybe I'll do a separate session in one of the future episodes diving into that, because it's a fascinating topic, to be honest. Actually, the last episode we discussed, or before last, we discussed on the show was a GitOps approach to monitoring dashboards and the Perseus project. So definitely something that comes up a lot also on this show. So do check out how the main takeaway for me was to see that GitOps becomes mainstream. So really interesting insights there. And the fun documentary about eBPF. We talked about eBPF here on the show several times, but if you're interested a fun way of getting a beginners on eBPF and a bit of the history, very fun. And those who saw the movies that were about the origins of Kubernetes, the origins of Prometheus, the same concept, very fun. They had the premiere, their screening during KubeCon. Were you there on the screening?
No, unfortunately, I missed that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's on my to-do list as well. I haven't watched the film myself, the documentary, but I need to do that. So, but the previous ones, both Prometheus and Kubernetes, were fun. So definitely should be fun as well. I think these are pretty much the main updates that I had on my end. If you don't have anything else, happy to move on to the second episode and talk about Istio.
Yeah, definitely. I unfortunately, I did HallwayCon more than KubeCon myself. I actually only went to like a couple of talks throughout the whole conference, but it was really cool to actually spend time to meet people, you know, just a lot of people you see on social media, you know, finally be able to meet them in person. That's really what the conference is for.
No, definitely. That's also on my end. I wasn't able to attend this time, and many people wrote me that I was where I was in the on the hallway track, and I told them that I'm not there, and that's the part I was missing the most. But try to at least follow online and as much as I can. So talking about Istio, and I'm not sure that everyone in our audience knows that. So let's start from the basics. Istio is obviously in the service mesh space. So maybe you can give us sort of the state of the union on service mesh to frame the domain.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, we started the journey of service mesh in 2017, right? So that's the year when we announced Istio to the public, right? At the end of the year in KubeCon in Austin, right? So there are a couple of parties were talking about service mesh. So one is Istio. We talk about the sidecar architecture, right? Were you there at KubeCon 2017 in Austin?
No, I wasn't there.
It's snowed. Yeah, that's what it's famous for, because Austin don't usually snow, and at KubeCon they actually got a little bit of snow. So we have the sidecar architecture by Istio project. Linkerd back then also have a service mesh, and they were using a per node proxy, right? So that's what they had.
A step back just to make sure that the audience has the frame of service mesh, and I know that probably a great percentage already knows it to some extent, but if you can just say what we're trying to do in the before the architecture, so that people know in terms
So essentially service mesh is a programmable framework to enable you as a user to connect, secure, and observe your microservices, right? So the idea behind service mesh is you don't solve connect, secure, and observe problem in your application, and you rely on the mesh to solve that, right? So typically, the service mesh involves a control plane who is programming the data plane, who works for your application and provide connect, secure, observe problem for you, right? So traditionally, when we first started service mesh in 2017, we had the sidecar architecture, we had the per node proxy architecture, and the Linkerd team soon realized the per node architecture has problem. So they converged with Istio as the sidecar architecture, which means by sidecar architecture, I mean, when you're running your application in Kubernetes, you kind of run a sidecar proxy along with your application. And that proxy is going to solve your connect, secure, and observe problem for you. So you don't have to worry about solving it in your application. So in 2021, there was another service mesh project, which is the Cilium, grow into service mesh space. And they started to say, hey, we have the power of eBPF. Let's figure out how to do proxy, how to do service mesh without sidecar. So they brought back of the per node proxy architecture, which many of us don't really agree, because the per node proxy architecture has an issue when it handles layer 7 processing, right? You don't know how to attribute your cost with multiple tenancy. You have a noise label, right? You have tenant isolation problem. One tenant who is really busy on layer 7 processing could bring all the other tenants down, right? If you're sharing the same proxy on the node. So last year, Istio Ambient Service Mesh was launched. It introduced a new data plane mode to allow you as a user to run your application in the mesh without sidecar. And what's really innovative of Ambient is we slice your function into two layers. So for layer 4, where we provide a secure overlay tunnel that's per node, which is called Zero Trust Tunnel. And then for layer 7, you can still do a per whatever tenant scope you feel confident, comfortable with. You have your own layer 7 proxy. So that's kind of the architecture of Ambient, which there's tremendous interest around Ambient at KubeCon. And the most question we got is actually when Ambient is going to be production ready. And we got a lot of feedback from users that's the right architecture for running application in the mesh without sidecar, right? People are very excited about Ambient. And in fact, I just prior to this meeting, in this podcast, I was just in the upstream Ambient community meeting. We're trying to figure out what are the design challenges remaining to drive Ambient to production ready. Yeah.
Yeah. So we covered a lot of ground here on this. So I want to break it down again, just to make sure that our audience that is less in the intricacies of the networking of cloud native architectures, just to make sure. So essentially, you mentioned, first of all, several open source projects in this in the service mesh domain. We talked about Istio. We talked about Linkerd. We talked about Cilium. Maybe a word deserves about Envoy, that is sort of a layer below. I'll ask you that for in a second there. And then you talked about architecturally that the two approaches here, originally we had the proxy and the per node architecture and the pros and cons between the two, and then the emergence of the sidecarless, sidecar versus sidecarless. These are sort of the journeys. Would you like to say a word about Envoy for those who are not familiar, and actually an underlying component in many of them?
Yeah, so Envoy has become the de facto proxy used in service mesh, right? So when we started Istio, we felt Envoy is a modern proxy, can handle like millions requests per second. It's high performance, and it's also very feature rich. It can do like retry, timeout. It can do like traffic shifting, traffic control, traffic mirroring. So it can do pretty much all the modern proxy can do. And we've noticed not only Istio project that choose Envoy proxy as its sidecar proxy, it's like a console connect, there's Kong, Kuma, there's open service mesh back when it existed, Cilium service mesh. So pretty much everybody kind of round around Envoy as the sidecar proxy. And Envoy is also a CNCF graduated project, so it's very mature, widely adopted in production environments.
Actually, maybe we should have mentioned that all the projects that we mentioned here are CNCF projects. So wearing our CNCF ambassador hats, yeah. I think this is a great source of pride for the cloud native community to show this variety and offer this so maybe unlike other open source stacks that I've seen in the past that took one very dogmatic path and said this is the path, here CNCF as a statement, I guess, or as an approach says that okay, give the variety, give the options, and let the users choose whatever suits them. I actually discussed that here on the show with Chris Anacek, the CTO of the CNCF, in a previous episode. And it was very clear. He said that this is the mindset, and I see a lot of value there. It could be confusing for newcomers that don't know where to start and how to choose, but I see also the value because different solutions can fit different needs. So Istio, Linkerd, Cilium. Maybe you should also mention in terms of maturity, Istio actually reached graduation earlier this year, and also later. This year, also Cilium reached graduation. So, and obviously, Envoy, do you want to say a word about maybe the maturity life cycle of this ecosystem?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely the most deployed in production service mesh, right? Cilium is very known for its CNI, and certainly, you know, probably the de facto CNI out there, right? So a lot of people are running Cilium for not only in the cloud provider, but also in the on-premise solution, right? Like Google, the next generation of Google Cloud is powered by Cilium as a data plane, right? So that's very impressive. LinkedIn, I don't believe they have a colo this time at KubeCon because I haven't seen it. From what I learned is they have more user in Europe, so hopefully they will have a LinkedIn or LinkedIn Day in Europe in Paris. Yeah, but it still is definitely. I've gone to a bunch of sessions where many people raise up their hand. They've tried Istio, they deploy Istio in production. Yeah, it's just a lot of momentum for sure.
Nice. Yeah. So it's really glad to see that. Great to see that. Also, it's not just that you have lots of projects, but there are tons of projects also in the sandbox. Actually, part of the reason that the CNCF is now looking, we're looking in the CNCF in revising the sandbox, maybe to provide more robustness criteria and things like that. But here we're talking about graduated projects, projects that they have shown usage in production by multiple companies. Multiple use cases, but maybe you can actually tell us, well, what does it take to reach a graduation? Because you actually took Istio through this maturation process.
Yeah, so we did. So in order to reach graduation, I think part of the key criteria is how many users are running in your software in production, right? It can't just be like one or two or three, right? So that's one key thing the TOC is looking at. The other thing TOC is looking at is
the
also
technical oversight committee, just for the
audience. For CNCF, yes. Yeah. The other thing the TOC is looking at is how diversity and active is the project, right? Is the project on a good trend of, you know, continue to grow, which Istio definitely is. In fact, the moment we launched Istio, being part of CNCF, we've seen way more activity in the community. Like Microsoft recently made the decision to have their open service mesh team join the Istio project. So we've been working with them very closely in the Istio community, and they believe Istio is superior. It's the best service mesh out there. That's why they, you know, out of all the projects, they pick Istio as the service mesh they want to contribute. I believe they also recently announced the Istio service mesh plugin or add-on for the Azure cloud. So that's very, very cool. Istio is really hitting all the service, all the cloud provider. I've been actually working with DIMS on some issue of running Istio in AWS cloud, right? Google Cloud, of course, have Istio. They have offering around Istio. So very healthy ecosystem around Istio, which is what is qualified for graduation.
Amazing. And actually, this touches also the topic that is a very important topic in KubeCon, the sustainability of projects. Projects, people, in order to bet, especially mission critical elements like the networking underlying your system, should be a project that you can see it also existing and flourishing in maybe 3-5 years from now. And we've seen projects that were successful at a certain time and then diminished. So I think this, first of all, it's a very hot topic within the open source community in general and the cloud native in particular. And also having this as part of the I guess, health criteria for graduation, it makes a lot of sense.
Totally, yeah. I mean, when you and I pick a project, you want to have one that has like a big company behind it, right? Because as a small company, you don't know when the small company would be pulled out. But big company like IBM, you know, like Google, Microsoft is behind the project and actively contributing, you know, that makes a whole lot of difference.
But not one. I will always look for it won't be one project by a company, otherwise they can put
right,
the plug.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, we've seen that within the CNCF and other open sources. So also the distribution, so that there's no single point of failure, that's also important.
Exactly. Yeah, you want at least two or three big player and a handful of small player. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So going back, we had a very good overview of the landscape, a very evolved domain of service mesh, and we've seen different solutions and different maturity levels. Now let's zoom into Istio, and you touched upon it in before when you started mapping the architecture, but maybe stripping apart the architectural underlying reasoning, but just going into the value proposition. How simply explain your elevator pitch in a way for the unique value proposition of Istio within the domain? What sets Istio apart within this landscape?
Yeah, so I believe what sets Istio apart is not only you can do simple things with Istio, right? Like if you want to enable mutual TLS among your application, it's just like one single configuration. You can enforce mutual TLS among your application very simple for very simple tasks. If you want to do traffic shifting, I mean, Istio's API is what's driving the new Gamma API. If you're not familiar with Gamma, Gamma is the gateway API for Mesh, right? That's been incubation in the Kubernetes networking SIG right now. So that's the future of the Service Mesh API, which is inspired from the Istio API. So I think what Istio is setting apart from the other service mesh is simple stuff are simple to use. Complex scenarios are possible, right? With larger enterprise, what we find out is many of these users, they're not going to be happy with just running service mesh within one single cluster, right? They have larger workloads, they have heterogeneous workloads, they are looking at running multiple clusters, they are looking at, be able to automatically fail over, be able to route preferred local with low latency, and if the local is not available, be able to distribute that to whichever based on their load balancer preference. They are looking at bringing their workloads on the VM to participate into the mesh. So that's where Istio really shine on these larger enterprise requirements, right? To be able to allow you to not only using Istio really, really simple for a single cluster, but also be able to run in heterogeneous environment across different cloud, across different zone, and be able to bring non-Kubernetes workload into the mesh as well.
Interesting. And when you say enterprises, maybe you can you give us some names or famous case studies that utilize Istio in broad scale and maybe interesting environments and setups? Not yes. Don't need the specifics, but just like big names that the audience may know and will get sense of what they're.
So in fact, for example, Airbnb, right? It's a big name. I mean, who hasn't booked anything with Airbnb, right? They are definitely using a lot of feature of Istio. Like they use our external control plane, which will allow you to run control plane outside of your cluster. I actually implement that in that feature in Istio. So they are a big fan of that feature, along with like connect, secure, and observe feature within Istio for their applications. Another big name is Splunk, right? They've been using Istio since 1.3, and they've seen it become easier and easier, use less resource, and much easier to install. So our Salesforce
the current
is
version,
another
by the way,
one.
Maybe we should mention so that people understand now how far
we went. That's a great question. So they were using since 1.3. Right now, we just released Istio 1.20, right? So we're talking about 1.3 is about Istio in 2019, I would take a guess. So they've been using Istio for the past 4 or 5 years, right? We also have other big name like Salesforce, Workplace Engine, who else? Fico, T-Mobile, right? T-Mobile was running like hundreds of clusters of Istio.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah, so definitely check out the case studies there to get a sense of the power of Istio in larger organizations. And by the way, you mentioned the Kubernetes Gamma project, which I'm fascinated to hear a bit more, maybe for the audience who's not familiar. But another thing that I wanted to ask you, I proposed the service call, is something that I found very interesting in the recent Kubernetes release, 1.28, that provided a new native sidecar support. I was wondering if you're familiar with this, maybe you can share with us a bit of your take, even before implementation for Service Mesh, just about the feature itself. I know it's not yet stable GA, but still, what's your take on the new native sidecar support? And then maybe you can touch upon its relevance for a Service Mesh.
Okay, yeah, I'll answer that first and then switch back to Gamma since you asked that too. In fact, it's your project actually implementing the native sidecar support from Kubernetes. So we actually published a blog out there. So if you're interested in trying this feature, I believe it's available in Istio 1.19 that was released a few months back. So you could potentially try this feature with Istio and your workload to use the native sidecar. One caveat, I would say, this is, I believe, an experimental alpha feature of Kubernetes, right? So you would have to install your Kubernetes with this feature enabled, right? So the bar to try it is a little bit high, but it's a good time to provide feedback because we do envision, you know, as this feature become mature in Kubernetes, we will also mature it in Istio. We think it's a great way to provide better support in Istio for sidecars, right? Because in traditional Istio sidecar, we had a lot of challenging managing that sidecar lifecycle compared with the application path lifecycle, right? So supporting sidecar natively would help us to solve some of the challenges we had with Istio sidecar before.
So as heavy users of sidecars, as Istio, and I know it's still alpha, obviously, but your first impression of the feature, does it deliver on the big promise of native support?
Yeah, so far, I mean, we've had some success in the development community. I don't know how widely adopted by our user because it's an experimental alpha feature. I suspect it will take some time to, you know, have people try it. The fact that it requires changing your Kubernetes installation configuration, right? I think that's, and also most of the cloud provider probably don't have it rolled out yet.
Yeah, no, that's why, because you're the early adopters. I was curious if you have like initial insights about it before others, if others are considering getting their hands dirty with it, if you have any insights. But sounds like you're so far think it's okay for especially in the alpha release. And you wanted to say a word about maybe elaborate a bit about Gamma, which is also a very, very significant enhancement for native Kubernetes.
Yes. So the Gamma is formed a work group in the Kubernetes Gateway Network SIG, right? So if you search Gamma, so Gamma stands for Gateway API for Mesh, yeah, something like that. So what we're trying to standardize through the Gamma group is a mesh API for different service mesh, right? So if you recall a few years ago, I think it was in KubeCon in Barcelona, the community launched SMI, right? Service Mesh Interface. And that project recently got archived. Part of the reason is the Gamma initiative is taking over to standardize the mesh API, right? And the reason why Gamma went over, I think politically, it was because Gamma actually has more participants, more vendor diversity, right? Google, we got Google on board, we got Microsoft on board, we got a bunch of small player, IBM also on board, we got a bunch of small player, you know, Solo is a participant, I believe iSurveillance and LinkedIn, Buoyant is also a participant. So we got representative from different service mesh projects. That's really cool about Gamma, is people collaborate and influence the future of the mesh API together. But I don't expect the Gamma API is going to be like mature anytime soon. This is exactly why in Istio we still have our API and we'll probably have it for a while before, you know, we fully endorse the Gamma API, even though we did implement Gamma API, but it doesn't have everything we need. So.
No, but it's amazing. I think, as I said before, and I say often, the real power of open source is actually lies with open standards. And I think the ability to standardize on the API and give the users the choice to play around between the different vendors without having, or not vendors, even open source projects without having to lock themselves in, or maybe even combining for different workloads that require, that have different requirements. That's amazing. So I'm really happy, because as we said, the sustainability is all about the working hands and the participants, and seeing two examples with the same mission statement, one that didn't have the diversification, one that did, yep. And they got the collaboration between competitors in a way, in an effective manner. I think that's a success story. So it's really exciting to see that the Gamma initiative is actually on its way to achieving this goal. So going back to Istio, you had lots of updates on Istio. The Istio day was full of news, and you were there on stage. So maybe you can give us the main highlights, the biggest themes and features that Istio delivered on KubeCon.
Yeah, definitely. So certainly Ambient is like a big jewel of the Istio, right? We got a lot of, we actually ran a TOC Ask Anything panel at Istio Day, right? So there's a lot of question around Ambient, right? Why Ambient? When Ambient is going to be production ready? And how is Ambient compared with the other sidecar-less service mesh, Cilium service mesh? We had people standing on stage talking about multi-cluster of Istio, right? How do you consume Istio for multi-cluster to be able to fail over on different region? We had people talking about how do they upgrade Ambient and integrate Ambient with a GitHub, right? You talk about GitHub was a hot topic, right? So we have Mitch Connor from AVH with his co-speaker, you know, did a live demo of upgrading Ambient. So that was super cool. And I mentioned earlier, we had John talking about design Ambient for large scale, how we design Ambient for that. And, you know, I was excited to see, I was also recognized as one of the top contributors of Istio on the opening keynote. So that's always exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing. So really, your contribution there. And I think I mentioned on the opening, but I'm happy to say again that you're not only from the very early days of the project involved, you're also author of various books, the Istio Explained, the Istio Ambient Explained, and many others. And you've been involved and deeply with the steering committee and with the tag and everything. So really amazing work, and your personal contribution and the achievement of the entire maintainer team in reaching this milestone. And especially, I think, Ambient, which I keep on hearing, and I'm not an expert in service mesh as much as you, but it keeps on coming up in conversations. It's been keeping on for the past year in increasing fashion. So it's definitely gaining a lot of momentum, and I'm really happy to see that becoming shaping up. Another thing I think is about the Gateway API that is going GA. Do you want to say about the Istio's implementation there? Being a pilot there?
Yeah, we're really excited about Gateway API finally went GA. I think we went a week before KubeCon, right? So Istio has been the first project ever implemented in the Gateway API. So we've actually, the Gateway API implementation on the north-south traffic at the ingress gateway, I believe it's at recommended for production for Istio at the beta level. The mesh side, as I was explaining to you earlier, the Gamma is still being mature, so we don't fully have the equivalent API on the mesh side yet, but Istio probably will be the first project whenever, you know, the Gamma gets into a more stable state.
As I said, early adopters also in that. So amazing work for the team. Another good news on the Istio front during KubeCon, that the CNCF announced training and certification launch for Istio, right? So now people can actually go and get officially certified. Do you want to say a word about that?
Gosh, I honestly haven't have the certification myself, but I know my coworker, Peter, he actually wrote the certification. He's run like multiple live stream to help people to be certified in Istio. I would definitely, you know, check out the amazing work he did. I think I would pass, so I didn't spend time to get the certification. It would be embarrassing if I failed. I would challenge Peter, hey, why you wrote the test this way?
I think you wrote it, so you wrote the Istio itself, so I don't think it's for you. I think it's for others, but actually having that, like, people probably are familiar with the Kubernetes certification and Prometheus and others, so it's part of the offering of the CNCF for the graduated project for sure. So definitely, if you're into it, that now you have more facilitated the training and certification path that you can take to get started with Istio. Do you want to say a word about the roadmap and what lies ahead for the project?
Yeah, so right now the project mainly focuses on ambient service mesh, right? We are working very closely in the community to drive ambient to production ready. We want to reach out to the beta status first. We know that's the number one question community is asking. There are a couple of challenges we're trying to work through, mainly on the first challenge is on the API side of Waypoint on layer 7. We want to make sure we have a concrete API that we, you know, we thought about all the scenarios and we're not moving or changing any of the API once we move to production ready. The second challenge we're trying to work through, which we actually have a plan, is how does ambient integrate with the rest of the CNI stack and continue have your network policy to be continue enforced. So that's a super critical issue. I think we have some plan in the community. We hope to roll that out pretty soon. So finger crossed on both of these. Optimistically, I hope ambient will reach beta sometime early next year. Probably start with single cluster first, and then we'll continue iterate adding more functions to ambient, such as maybe multi-cluster, maybe VM, maybe, you know, allow you to run sidecars with, you know, your pods in ambient. So there's plenty of to do to keep us busy for the next year, just to build the ecosystem around ambient.
Amazing. Amazing. And if people want to, we're getting to the top of the hour here, but I do want, if people want to follow up and follow Istio, the updates and get into the chatter, where's the best place to follow and get involved?
Yeah, so go to istio.io. I would definitely recommend go there. There is also slack.istio.io. So you can join us on Slack. There's a get involved tab on istio.io. That's the easiest way to get involved, so you know how to, what's the place to ask question, how do you join community, how do you fill a bug, what are the contributor letter, you know, I think it has everything you need to get involved with Istio.
And obviously, as any other project, also you can find the project on the CNCF's workspace. It has a designated Slack channel, so just check it out as well there, I'm sure. And how can people reach out to you if they have you want to follow up after the episode?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, lensang_UNC. I'm obviously also on CNCF Slack and the Istio Slack.
Sounds good. So definitely worthwhile following Linson from my experience. So and especially if you're interested in service mesh in Istio. So and check out her books as well. Highly recommended. So Lynn, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's just so fun to, you know, catch up with another CNCF ambassador, talk about KubeCon and also service mesh.
Yeah, and looking forward. Unfortunately, we haven't even had the chance to catch up on this KubeCon and maybe KubeCon Paris in 2024 or some other event.
Yeah, we'd love to. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Danton.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, the audience, for joining us on this live stream and this episode. That's all for today's episode of Open Observability Talks. All the episodes, as always, are available on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube as a video cast if you want to see us and see the CNCF ambassador shirt that I chose especially for today. And if you are listening to this on demand on the podcast, do know that we stream the episodes live on Twitch and YouTube live. So follow us on Twitter at OpenObserve to get the updates about when the live streams are taking place, and also to share comments, suggestions, news bits, and anything else that that you fancy discussing. You can reach out also to me at Horovitz, Horovitz, if you have any private suggestions on the show or anything else. And with that, I would like to thank you very much for listening. I'm Dotan Horovitz, and see you on next month's episode. And as always, may the open source be with you.